Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're trying something a little different. We're launching a comparative mission.
Right.
We're setting aside the big, obvious theological divides, monotheism versus non-theism, and looking for the shared spiritual DNA.
We're looking at the scriptures that people actually live by.
Yeah, what's in their hands every day?
So we have the Dhammapada, the Karaniya Metta Sutta, the Heart Sutra, and the Lotus Sutra.
Yeah, and on the other side, the Quran.
Exactly. The goal isn't to say they're the same, but to find that common ground of sanctity, to see the spirit behind the words.
And what's wild is that the starting point, the diagnosis of what's wrong with the human condition, it's basically identical.
It really is.
It's all about clinging to a world that's constantly changing. Buddhism calls it samsara.
And in the Quran, it's attachment to hayat al-dunya, the life of this world.
So both traditions agree. The pain comes from trying to hold on to things that just don't last.
Which brings us right to the metaphysics of it. The core Buddhist insight, especially in the Heart Sutra, is anicca.
Impermanence.
Impermanence. Everything that's made up of parts, everything conditioned. It's all fundamentally unstable. It's perishing, moment by moment.
Okay, but wait. If Buddhism says the whole world is this unstable, fleeting thing, how does a text like the Quran, which is so focused on God, handle that same idea?
Oh, it doesn't ignore it at all.
Yeah.
It actually confirms it very rigorously.
How so?
There's a verse, 28.88, that says, Kulu she elokun ila washahu.
Which means?
It means everything is bound to perish except his face.
Wow.
So you see, the world lacks stability. The only real refuge is in the eternal, the unconditioned. The function is identical.
Whether you call it nirvana or washallah, the face of God.
You're escaping the flux to find what's real.
Okay, so if reality is fleeting, how are we supposed to act? This is where the ethics come in and the metaphors get incredibly powerful. The Karaniya Metta Sutta gives this one very specific image for what love should be. It says, just as a mother would protect her only child with her own life.
Oh, yes.
Even so, cultivate a boundless heart towards all beings.
And that maternal archetype is absolutely central. The Arabic word for God's mercy, Rahma.
Right.
Its root is Rahim. The word for the womb.
So God's mercy is like a womb.
It's sustaining, it's unconditional. And the Prophet Muhammad used the exact same image. He asked if a mother would throw her child in a fire.
Of course not.
And then said that Allah is far more merciful than that mother. It's the highest ethical ideal in both faiths.
So the diagnosis is the same attachment, and the ethical goal is the same, this motherly compassion. But how do you teach that? How do you get such a high truth across without people just rejecting it?
That's the problem of pedagogy, right? And the Lotus Sutra has a famous answer, upaya.
Skillful means.
Skillful means. You see it in the parable of the burning house. The father can't just tell his kids the house is on fire.
They wouldn't understand.
So he promises them toys, different carts, to lure them outside to safety. The teaching has to be tailored to who's listening.
That sounds so much like the Islamic idea of hikmah or wisdom.
It's a direct parallel. There's a saying from Ali ibn Abi Talib. Speak to people only according to their level of knowledge. Then he asks, would you like for Allah and his messenger to be denied?
In other words, telling the wrong truth at the wrong time is just counterproductive.
Exactly. So in the end, the convergence is all very practical. Both paths prescribe, well, the same things.
Like what?
Cognitive discipline, call it sati, mindfulness or dhikr, remembrance, ethical restraint. Boundless compassion.
So what does this all mean for you listening? I think the sources are pointing to something. The path isn't about becoming someone new.
No, it's about uncovering what's already there.
Just stripping away all the conditioning to find your innate true self, whether you call it Buddha nature.
Or fitra, the innate knowledge of God.
Which leaves us with a final thought to chew on.
The destination itself seems structurally analogous. The Buddhist goal of extinguishing greed and delusion nirvana, and the Sufi Muslim goal of annihilating the ego, fana, in the presence of the real, al-haq.
They're both trajectories toward liberation.
Right. And if, as the Quran says, diversity is part of a divine plan to see who is best in deeds, to have a race to goodness, then maybe the paths can wind through different valleys.
But the climb itself, the ascent, leads to the same summit of peace.
Salam, or Shanti.